You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to do an update on two shows. They were really two short shows, Mondays and Tuesdays. And the reason I'm doing it today is that the Federal Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve has completed their meeting. And the chairman, or the chair, Janet Yellen, gave a press conference yesterday. After first reading a statement, it opens to questions from various members of the press. But I read the statement as well as the various charts prior to listening to the press conference. And I kept saying to myself, a lot of money is being spent. I don't know what the payroll is for the Federal Reserve in terms of their whole staffs and the various people on those staffs. Most of them have doctorates in economic statistics. So they're very bright people, usually have degrees from some of the very best schools, and they have devoted, many of them, nearly their whole lives to being in academia, usually as professors of economics, statistics, business, and that's all well and good. But why do they have any claim when they make policy decisions to being better than what the market could do all by itself? And my answer to that is they don't. And what exactly is the Fed doing? When you say the Federal Reserve System, central banks, a lot of people immediately turn you off unless they're interested in that type of subject matter. But you need to remember the actions of this small group of people. None of them were elected. The governors were appointed by presidents, and they serve a 14-year term. And usually they're somewhat pre-approved in the sense that there's a certain amount of vetting going on. But their policy decisions affect you and me. And we see it as a consequence of rises in the general price level. And that's a direct result of changes in the monetary policy. What I'm trying to say as diplomatically as I can, no small group of people can anywhere close replicate the market. And that's what we need to get back to, where interest rates are determined completely by the market. It's never going to happen. I would hope it would, but it's not going to happen. And like I said, last show I did on this, a lot of attention, what they typically do in these meetings is the staff will give briefings as to the state of the economy, what real GDP, gross domestic product, both where it's at right now in terms of actual numbers, where they're using various econometric models to come up with where they think it's going to be. In the next several quarters, years out, they're looking at economic indicators. They're looking at economic models, and they're focusing on typically because their prime concern, even though they have a dual mandate, is price stability. And they do not want inflation to take off. Yet the inflation is caused by their actions. You see, ideally, we'd like the money supply to grow as the output of the economy grows. That would be an ideal world. That's sort of what Milton Friedman was recommending. You don't need the Federal Reserve. You don't need this board. Just grow either at a constant rate or as the production of the economy either decreases or increases, maybe do some minor adjustments. Others have recommended strongly a rule-based monetary policy. The name that comes to mind is the Taylor rule. He's a professor at Stanford, and I have before I go on, I'll forget if I don't. You listen to this show by going to prankpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see my photograph, but under the photograph, you have links to my various shows. So if you click on the link, and this is the 430th show, and this will probably be posted either by 10 o'clock tonight or sometime tomorrow morning to listen to the show. But underneath that, I have a number of videos, as well as photographs, YouTube videos, articles, and I have some fun with it. But the point I'm trying to make is markets consist of thousands, tens of thousands, millions of people that are continually making decisions on what they're going to buy, what they're going to sell, and at what price. There's no way that can be replicated because knowledge is dispersed worldwide. And there's no matter how brilliant the people are, how many of them you have, what staff you have supporting them, they cannot do a better job than the market. Yet when we have negative consequences, such as the financial crisis of 2008, while there's a lot of blame to go around, one of the major contributors to that financial crisis was the action of the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Open Market Committee. There are others. Wall Street had a lot to do with it. Greed had a lot to do with it. But I'm very much a market-based system because ideas, economic policies, to paraphrase John Maynard Keynes, do have consequences. And you have to be aware of that. Real consequences. Because what happened in 2008 resulted in millions of people, tens of millions of people, not only in the United States, but worldwide, losing their jobs, and that in turn led to people losing their houses and people being unemployed for long periods of time. Now, the recovery has been slow, and that's the biggest problem. But the real long-range challenge is to understand that government intervention into the economy invariably leads to more government intervention, to correct the previous mistakes. That's what the Federal Open Market Committee is doing. Now, they don't view it that way. They're trying to correct a past mistake. And they've gone down this path of unconventional monetary policy. What that has meant is twofold. One, the Federal Reserve System has, through what it's been called quantitative easing, has been buying over time trillions of dollars, over $4 trillion of largely treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities. What does that mean? And why is it important? If the Federal Reserve had not done that, interest rates for treasury securities would have went up, and I would say substantially up, for the simple reason many people that invest in these types of securities would have required a risk premium for them to buy it. Instead, by the Fed intervening into the economy and buying what the Treasury Department simply couldn't sell, and that's the worst thing to have is a failed auction. But the Treasury Department made sure, as did the Fed, that that didn't happen. There was always a buyer for those Treasury securities. Now, why was the Fed forced to do that? I'm trying to go backwards to tell you what the problem is. When the U.S. government tax collections are way below what the government has budgeted and appropriated, and I should say the Congress, the House, and the Senate, first they set a budget, and then they appropriate funds. And the problem that happened when the economy went into a recession, where you have millions of people being laid off, tax revenues went down. In other words, tax collections went down dramatically as a percent of the economy. Usually, on average, it's about 18%. I forget the exact number, but went under 15%. It's not hard to understand. If people are not working, they're not paying federal income taxes, nor are they paying Social Security or Medicare payroll taxes. And it's not just at the federal level, it's at the city, the county, the state level. That's why you try to avoid recessions. But it gets back to what is the major problem? What's the central problem here? And it's very much a political problem. Economics is important, but what we're talking here is politics. Congress, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, have been making promises to the people in terms of Social Security benefits, Medicare benefits. Now we have Obamacare benefits, subsidies, as well as welfare. And the problem is, when you add up all the money the government is spending, it's way in excess of total tax collections, or what's called tax revenue. That's called a deficit. And we've been running massive deficits now for years. At one time, $100 billion was a big deficit. Today, that's small change. For several years, we were running deficits of over $1,000 billion, where a billion is $1,000 million. I know the numbers are mind-boggling, but you need to get a sense of the magnitude and the scope of the problem. Ladies and gentlemen, what our government, our representatives in Congress, doesn't make any difference whether they're Republican or Democrat, are doing is living way beyond the means of the American people to support that level of government spending. Way beyond the means. You and I, as well as businesses, cities, colleges, schools, churches, nonprofit organizations, all those entities, whether they be individuals, corporations, partnerships, all have budgets. We have to live within our means. That doesn't mean we can't borrow money. I'm not against borrowing or going into debt, but it should be for a good reason. And more importantly, you should have the capability of paying off those loans, whether it be a credit card or a loan to buy a car or a mortgage. And the problem you get when the economy goes into a recession, many people simply don't have the savings to carry them over till they get their next job, especially in a deep recession, which we had. But the key point is you have a budget. And if you run up, for example, a lot of credit card debt, the banks ultimately will cut you off. You won't be able to get another credit card, nor will you be able to get an increase in your limit. Because one of the first things they're going to ask you is, well, what's your income? And if you don't have a job, you don't have an income. If you don't have savings, you can't pay the bills. And that's the point. Individuals, families, your employer, where you go to school or college or church or your nonprofit organizations, the city that you live in or the county and the state, all have budgets and they all must be balanced. And where you temporarily go in the debt, you're expected to pay that off, with one big notable exception, and that is the federal government, the U.S., United States federal government. Now, this is not the way it used to be. This is very much started during the Great Depression, and really prior to the Great Depression, where we started to run deficits. Usually, the federal government prior to that time, the only time they really had deficits was during and right after a war, for example, the Civil War or World War I. But usually that debt was quickly paid off. And that's the way it should be. No longer. The federal government today is accustomed to running massive deficits, which has led to more and more and more spending and higher debt. And the word comes up, it's not sustainable. But there's a more pressing point. What are we doing when we do this? Even if the problem is, many of the things we spend money on are done with the best of intentions. Raising Social Security benefits, raising Medicare benefits, providing subsidies for people that, for health insurance, Obamacare. And there are people that like these benefits. They like the program. I would say Social Security and Medicare are very popular because people paid into them. And now when they're approaching their retirement years, typically when they're 65, 66, 67, they start collecting the benefits. The problem is the benefits that they receive are, if they live, that's the key thing. Because if you don't live to that age, you get nothing. The problem is both those programs are not sound. They're running deficits. Another way to say it is the benefits you're receiving from both of those programs were overpromised. That's why people like them. And it does provide people that are in their late 60s, 70s, 80s with a minimum level of income. Think of it as a social safety net. But when your government is overpromised, and people are living longer, and they are living longer, something has to give, and it will give. Ultimately, both of these programs, unless they dramatically do one or two things, they're going to do both. They're going to have to cut benefits, or and they're going to have to increase the payroll taxes, which many today would already consider too high. That's the problem you get into, the situation you get into where you overpromise. That's why we have unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion. It can never be fully funded. Actuarially, that's what you should do. You should fund these programs. But there's no way these programs will ever be funded. And ultimately, it will crash. Now, is our representatives, our people in the House, as well as senators, really confronting this problem? The answer is no. Amazingly, it is no. They think the problem will go away, or by the time they retire, it'll be someone else's problem. There's a ticking time bomb here. It is a generational time bomb, and it will go off in about 15 years, if not sooner. Because what we're doing, what's very immoral about what we're doing, is we're placing a huge burden, a crushing burden, on not only the people that are living and working today, just starting out, as well as future generations. We, the people of America, are living beyond our means, and we must insist on fiscal responsibility. In other words, cutting back on various programs. This week, Congress was passing a budget, and I've been listening to some of the talk radio shows, and there's a portion of the people in Congress that want dramatic increases in defense spending. Now, I'm for strong defense. What I'm not for is government intervention by the United States, military intervention, to build democracies or be policemen of the world. That is a lost cause, and frankly, why it might seem like a great idea, it's a terrible idea when you're in a situation that we are today. No one wants to look at the financial mess we're in. That's why I'm emphasizing this. And there are different aspects to it. There's the fiscal side in terms of the spending. There's the tax side. And yes, there's the monetary side. They all go together. The problem is most of the people in Congress that work in Washington, in the various agencies, departments, the White House, as well as the staffs, few have any understanding of economics, but most of them, their background is legal. I'm not talking the secretarial help or assistance, but that doesn't equip you to have an understanding of how the economy works and the fact that we have a serious problem. Now, there are a few people in both the House and the Senate that understand this, but they're in a minority. Everyone has their agenda and their interest. But what I'm looking for is a sense of who's looking out for the general welfare of the American people. And the dilemma is this: even if they understand the problem, and even if they know what needs to be done, you have to have a lot of courage to be willing to tell the American people the situation. Ladies and gentlemen, there are no people running for president that are telling the American people this. Some Americans understand it. Most do not. We're in a very serious mess because government spending is simply totally out of control. And yes, I understand that the budget, the deficits are going down, but it's still going to be over $500 billion this fiscal year that ends September 30th, 2015. I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but I'm sure we're already running $200-300 billion and heading towards $500-600 billion. In less than 3 or 4 years, our national debt will exceed $20 trillion. It's over $18 trillion now. And it's going to get a lot worse for the simple reason more and more people are retiring, especially those in the baby boom generation. I'm on the leading edge of that generation. And those are people that were born between 1946 and 1964. It's about 75 million people. Yes, a few of those people have died, but because the life expectancy has gone up, up, and up, especially as you attain your age, it tends to go out. And we've had huge advances in medicine and in drugs. People are living a lot longer. You see, when Social Security went into effect in the 1930s, people typically did not live to age 65. That's why they made the benefits contingent upon you attaining the age of 65, because they knew most people wouldn't get to 65. Now, not all, but most people live way beyond 65. The late 70s and 80s is the fairly typical today. And it also depends on whether you're a male or a female. And it also depends on your race. What it really depends on is how well you take care of yourself physically. I'm acutely aware of that because I have a weight problem that I can't believe I weigh this much. But I'm focusing in on the problem. So individuals have a way to either prolong their lives or cut them short. It's called good habits and bad habits. If you eat excessively, drink alcohol excessively, use drugs excessively, don't exercise, have a dangerous lifestyle, you probably won't collect any benefits. A few of you will be lucky, but most won't. Now, if you do live or focus in on your health, don't abuse alcohol or drugs, eat sparingly, exercise, you will probably live into your 70s or 80s. And because of that, you will get many times the benefit from Social Security and Medicare that was anticipated when these programs were originally designed and over the years expanded. Now, I'm zeroing in on that because there are several areas, and entitlements is one of them. Welfare is the other. Defense is the third that we need to be focused on. Because today, those three are responsible for over 60% of the budget. Entitlements, welfare, programs, and defense. Ladies and gentlemen, what we need to be doing as soon as possible, if we can overcome the deficit of leadership, and that's a big if, in Washington, D.C., is to get our financial house in order. To get our financial house in order. And what that means is dramatic cuts on all programs of the government, the federal government. That's Social Security, that's Medicare, that's Obamacare, and the various welfare programs. Food stamps, Section 8 housing subsidies, earned income tax credit, just to name a few. And there are many others. And then we have to control defense spending, even though we live in a very dangerous world. I've listened to people with an agenda. We need a larger Navy. We need a larger Army. We need a larger Air Force. And we're not spending as much as a percent of the budget as we used to. That's true, dramatically. At one time, not too long ago, about half the budget was defense spending. Today, it's under 20%, under 20%. And it used to be around 5% of GDP. Now it's less than 4%. I think the number's 3.5%. I haven't looked at the numbers recently. But yes, defense spending has fallen. But what has happened over those years? We've become the world superpower. We've become the policeman of the world, and we've intervened over and over again. It's time to bring the troops home. It's time to close bases, and we have dozens of them across the world, in particular in the Middle East. It is time to the European nations, who have dramatically cut back on military spending, to pick up the slack. Now, I'm going to immediately be accused of an isolationist. No, I'm not an isolationist. I believe in a strong defense. What I don't believe is militarism and empire, because both of them lead to wars. Both of them ultimately lead to tyranny, and they ultimately lead to failure because the empire falls because of its own weight. It's the burden of being the superpower or hegemon. And we have people, both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, that simply won't face reality. And it's a stark reality. What we're talking here is massive cuts, and some of them are very popular programs, Social Security and Medicare being the top two, but there are others. And every one of those, there's a constituency. We can either do this in a very rational, deliberate, methodical way over time, and we don't have much time. Or we can continue doing what we've been doing. The phrase is kick the can down the road or put your head in the sand. And I know the temptation is great because there are a lot of people that are in the so-called leadership of both parties as well as in the White House that make the calculation, well, I'm going to be here 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. And I understand what's happening, but I'm going to be gone. I'm going to make mine and leave. And unfortunately, that is the attitude of probably the majority of people in Washington, D.C., both of the political elite establishment as well as the bureaucracy. But what needs to be done, for example, is close many of our federal departments, because for the simple reason, we can't afford them. And I'm talking entire departments. I'm not talking a 10 or 15% budget cut. I'm talking about closing down departments. Completely. And I know some of you are saying you're dreaming. That's impossible. When you can't pay the bills, guess what happens? Let me tell you what happens in the private sector when your company goes bankrupt. It's shuttered. It's closed down. You don't pay the rent, you're kicked out. You don't pay the bills, people sue you. If you can't meet your payroll, guess what? Your employers won't show up. And what's hiding that problem today is the fact that the United States is in the unique position amongst all governments of the world, because the dollar, our currency, is the reserve currency for other nations, which gives us a certain amount of privileges that, unfortunately, we're abusing. We're printing money. Now, the Federal Reserve doesn't print money. It creates money at a keyboard. Doesn't write it on a piece of paper, nor does it print the money. It just makes an entry on a spreadsheet, and that goes to the Fed, and the Fed pays the bills that way. It's like you having a credit card and using that credit card to pay your bills. Unfortunately, there are many people that do that. I used to have credit cards. I don't have credit cards anymore. If I can't pay cash out of my wallet, I don't buy it. Now, that really constrains my spending, and that's why I do it. Because I know all of you are tempted to buy things that within days or weeks or months, you wonder why you bought it. It's very tempting to do when you have a credit card. Ooh, I like that. Let's buy it. And people do that. They fall into that trap, and then they find out that the interest they have to pay on that makes that good quite expensive. Yeah, you might have got it on sale, but when you add up all the interest you had to pay, it's many times that price. That's the temptation for an individual. Our federal government is way beyond that. And this has been the problem throughout history. This is not a new problem. Usually in the past, where this problem was brought to the fore, if you will, is when a country went to war for whatever reason. And the monarch or whoever the leader is had to borrow the money because the taxes couldn't support what he needed to engage in the war. And there were people that would lend them money, not for free. And either they won the war or they lost. If they lost, the people that lend the monarch the money lost too. Sovereign risk. Today, the United States is borrowing. It's a massive borrowing. The Treasury securities is the biggest asset class for the simple reason you have people all over the world that, for liquidity purposes, hold their assets in Treasury securities, either very short term, like bills, or intermediate term, like 5-year notes, or 10-year bonds, or longer. And because of that, the United States government has expanded its scope. What we need to get back to are not the good old days, but what we need to get back to is balanced budgets, what I'm calling fiscal responsibility. And that's essential. And that means cutbacks. The word you'll hear is austerity. Imagine for a minute that we didn't have any debt and all our Social Security, Medicare were fully funded. If we were in that situation, and that's where you want to be, we would be a very strong and formidable economic power. But we're not. On occasion, we have balanced the budget, but overall, starting really in the 30s through today, it's like being slowly but surely addicted to a drug, and it's gotten worse, worse, and worse, and we are addicted to this. But who pays the price? Future generations. That is the immorality of it, and it is immoral. It's short-sighted to do this. We need leadership to confront this. And I'm not seeing it. I am not seeing it from Washington. It's very much business as usual, the status quo. We'll worry about it in the future. And a lot of finger pointing. The Democrats want to extend and expand welfare programs as well as entitlement programs. I call that Santa Claus socialism. And that's how they want to get elected. Vote for me and I'll give you some free stuff. Or I'll give you more free stuff. The Republican Party does the same. They tend to emphasize defense, But they also do expansions in entitlement programs, such as when George Bush expanded Medicare for drugs, even though people were telling them, we have financial problems. We need to get the United States federal government's house, fiscal house in order. And let me tell you something, it's not going to take a year, 5 years, 10 years. We're talking decades, because we didn't get to this problem overnight. It's been over 85 years. And it'll probably take more than 100 years to correct the situation. So if you're living today, most likely you won't be living to see balanced budgets and all our social programs fully funded, if ever. Now, if we don't do this, what happens? The federal government defaults. They don't pay the interest on the bonds, the treasury securities, or the principal. It's just like if the United States fought a war and they lost and we're conquered, and whoever the conquering nation is takes our stuff. That's why I'm for a strong defense. But we need to start refocusing, not abroad, because the biggest enemies that the United States have today is not China. It's not the Middle East. It's not Europe. Look in the mirror. The biggest enemies of the American people are the American people and their representatives that are followers. They are not stepping up to the plate and showing leadership. None of them. I listen to talk radio. I'll do what several of them will say. The Republican Party has a strong bench. What they're talking about is, we have many possible candidates to be president of the United States. And I'm sure you have your favorite. Common names mentioned are Senators Mark Rubio, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, just to name three. Governors, you have Governor or former Governor Jeb Bush of Florida, formerly of Florida, Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin, Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, Christie of New Jersey, and many more. And some of those individuals I could support, but I don't really know what these people stand for. And that's part of the problem. Today, if you're going to run for public office, your first decision is, which party will I run under or stand under? Democrat or Republican? But I've lost any sense that either political party, Democrat or Republican, have any sense of urgency. Many of them are oblivious to this problem and think it can continue. I'm trying to tell you, the party's over. The party's over. There will be a day of reckoning. The debt bomb will go off. It's not going to be pretty. And then if we continue down this road of bigger and bigger and bigger government, we're going to replace our republic with a tyranny. We're already seeing it, folks. We're already seeing it. We have a president that's out of control. He's a tyrant. Those are strong words. I would never have said that, but I'm not exaggerating. The latest idea from our tyrant is mandatory voting. Now, I know there are some countries that have it. Many of them are North Korea, but they're democracies that have it. Australia, Belgium, amongst others. But that's not America. In America, you can vote or you don't have to vote. It is only a tyrant that would insist on it. And that's his latest idea of the day, mandatory voting. Because he really thought the reason why the Democratic Party didn't win the last election is his base didn't come out. If only his base would have come out, the Democratic Party would have swept the elections. Seems to forget politics is about competition, and it's your responsibility to get your base out. And if you don't get your base out, it's because they don't want to vote for you. The president was defeated, as was the Democratic Party, in 2010 and again in 2014, massively. That's why the Republicans have control of both the House and the Senate today, and they probably will have the White House as well in 2016. What are the people mad about? Let me give you probably the issue after jobs in the next coming election, and that is going to be open borders and giving legal status to 30 to 50 million illegal aliens. That will be an issue, and it should be an issue, because the American people, American citizens, should come first. And what the president is doing is illegal, unconstitutional, and the remedy for when the president does that is either cut off the funds, which our Congress has not done, or impeach him. This is a serious matter. This is a constitutional crisis. Now, I could have provided you a list of things that this president has done that could be included in articles of impeachment, but I'm coming to the conclusion what's the point. We have a Congress that's incapable of cutting off the funding. We have a Congress that simply are afraid of the president, and that's part of a tyranny. And they're afraid of the media. They don't want to be called a racist because they know the race card is going to be played. And because of that, they are not doing their constitutional duty. They're betraying their oath of office. Now, there's something else going on here. While the Democratic Party wants to give legal status and ultimately citizenship to at least 30 to 50 million illegal aliens are here, many in the Republican Party want to do the same thing. Yet if you ask the American people, by overwhelming majorities, they do not approve of illegal immigration and want it stopped. Not that they're against immigration. They favor immigration. They want it controlled. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's about time we get our house in order. Now, let's bring it back to what the Federal Reserve met in March. You had a lot of well-paid people, not just the governors and the presidents and the staff, got paid to make a decision. What was the decision about? Should we increase the target rate that's been between 0 and 25 basis points, and it's been at that since December of 2008? Should we increase it, and when should we increase it? That is a nutshell what they had to decide. Now, what was the decision? They're not going to change it. In other words, they could have changed it. They're not. The target is still between 0 and 25 basis points. And the federal funds rates, the overnight rate that banks charge one another if they're short on reserves and need to make an overnight loan, you can't get that rate. Now, I bring this up for one reason, and maybe I need to include some charts, but you can go to the previous shows on this subject for the statistical information. Well, you'll get a debate amongst economists as to what either the nominal or real federal funds rate should be. The nominal rate, between 3 and 4%. I'm on the high end. I think it should be at least 4%. Those are nominal rates. The reason I'm giving you that information, the Fed and its members, I'm not saying panic is not the right word. They don't want to show panic. But they know deep down that it's way past the time to start increasing that federal funds rate target. Like I said in past shows, it should have been gradually been increasing for the last 2 years. They're gun shy, folks. They're afraid to pull the trigger or push the button, whatever metaphor you want to use. But they're desperate to increase it because they know deep down it's wrong. They're bright people. They look at the same charts. And yes, you can make a case, and they did make a case every meeting that they've had over those from December of 2008 forward to keep it where it is. But that policy has consequences. And what has been the consequences? A below-trend recovery, one of the worst and slowest recoveries. Yes, we didn't go into another recession yet, but this is not a recovery to write home about. Now, they're getting closer and closer and closer to about ready to, I call it the launch button, to increase that rate. Now, I suspect if they do it, they'll increase it from 0 to probably 0.5% on the low end, and from probably 25 basis points to maybe as high as 1%. Ooh, aren't you excited? Where the normal range nominally is somewhere between 3 and 4%. You'll get an argument as to where it is. And what are they afraid of? They're afraid of causing another recession. They might get one whether they know it or not, but their actions of both quantitative easing, buying all these treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities, over $4 trillion, combined with this near-zero interest rate policy, has a consequence. What's the consequences? Slow economic growth. And I have posted the charts on my blog, as well as their forecast. And they've reduced their forecast as the change in real GDP. And you can see the numbers. What you need to know, to put it in context, the general trend over many decades in terms of real GDP growth is about 3.1 to 3.5%, depending on what year you start and end. Why the high numbers is about 3%. Most of these are in the 2 to 3% range. In other words, we're stagnating. We're going at either a half speed or maybe two-thirds to three-quarters speed. And it's important because what's staring them in their faces is the fact that their monetary policy is partially responsible for those numbers. I say partially because the core problem is government spending being way in excess of tax revenue. And the answer is not to increase taxes. That's the worst answer. The answer, the prescription, is to dramatically cut spending. And we're not doing it. All the Fed has really been doing is enabling the federal government to run these massive deficits. That's very much a political decision. They want to say they're independent. They're not independent. That is a political decision. You know, one of the descriptions, they bring the punch, they bring the liquor that they put in the punch bowl, and they're afraid of picking up the punch bowl and taking it away. They have been supplying the drugs, not literally. When I mean drugs, the money that pays the federal government's bills by buying those treasury securities and creating money. Now, they stopped in the fall. That was a problem. I think it was the biggest mistake they ever made. But the other thing they did was to keep interest rates low. Now, do I think my opinion is any better than theirs? The answer to that is no. I'm for markets, not a committee of PhDs, no matter how bright and how many, deciding what interest rate should be. Let the market determine that. And that's the point. If the market determined this, the interest rates would be a lot higher. But what would be a lot lower? Government spending would be a lot lower. Why? The Treasury would have to pay a premium to attract investors to buy their securities. They don't want that. And that's the luxury that the federal government has. It has a buyer of first resort for its debt. It's like having credit cards with no limits. And like I said, the Fed is desperate to increase those rates. Do I know when they're going to do it? No. What's my speculation on this? What do I suspect? Probably in June, could be later, but probably in June, they're going to increase the target rate up to 0.5% to probably 1%. It might not be June. It might be September. It might be the next year. But what needs to happen between now and June? Every month we get a jobs report, non-farm payroll jobs, how many were created. If we get 300,000 plus for the next 3 months, combined with an increase in wages, I'm not going to put a number, but a positive, significant increase in wages. And also, by June, they'll have the numbers on what the first quarter did. And if it's about 3%, then I think they're going to press the button. They're way overdue. And like if they asked me, I would have said 2 years ago, start increasing it gradually, 25 to 50 basis points. In other words, 0.25% to 0.5%. But they didn't do it. It's too late. And they had very good reasons. They're behind the power curve. And they're setting the stage to gradually, methodically increase the federal funds target. And they'll use the mantra, we are data driven. We are data driven. Well, good for you. I hope your economic models are right. I'm not a fan of discretionary monetary policy. At best, a rule-based monetary policy I would be in favor of. Ideally, I want the markets to determine interest rates and not have a Federal Reserve. But that is a bridge way too far, because all the Fed has been is a great enabler of the dramatic expansion of the federal budget by being a lender first resort to our government. Now, they've done some positive things, but I'm talking the big picture. That's what they're about. Besides bailing out banks that should have failed. But that's another show. So, yes, I think the Fed is definitely going to increase those target rates. And they spent a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of discussion, a lot of arguments. But you can look at, there's a chart, and it's a useful chart. I would go online, but you can see what they want, the midpoint of their target range. They show what the various members of the Federal Open Market Committee, both the governors, the presidents, where they think the rate should be. I'll summarize it. They want it higher. Everybody wants it higher. But they seem to be just unable to press that button. And I know why. They think it's going to put the economy back in the recession. They don't know. I don't know. Maybe it could. Maybe it wouldn't. I don't know. That's why we have markets and not central committees of a command and control type economy trying to determine the price of money in terms of an interest rate. With that, I have to close the show. I hope this was not too technical. I do have, if you're interested, the entire press conference, including questions. I also have a summary of it, but I also have some, let's say, opposing views of some of the leading economists. Some of them are unfortunately passed away, such as Milton Friedman, Friedrich Hayek. Now, if I were really pressed for time, listen to Thomas Sowell on intellectuals and society. That's about a 36-minute video, but if you're really pressed for time, listen to that. Because the people that are making these decisions are what Thomas Sowell would call intellectuals. And they have, while they're very bright people, they have certain deficiencies. And as Milton Friedman, if you don't have a lot of time, there's a brief clip by the late Milton Friedman that summarizes, and the title of it is Milton Friedman Abolished the Fed, The Record of the Federal Reserve. He's making the point that I'm making. It's not that these people are not good intentioned, but they make mistakes. And that has been the history of the Federal Reserve. They always are making mistakes because there's no way for them to replicate markets. They seem to have not got that point. Now, some of them understand that. Tomorrow I'll probably have my long show. This will probably be about an hour show after I edit it. But since the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, met Tuesday and Wednesday and gave a press conference, the chair did, I wanted to close, if you will, that loop and tell you my reaction to it. I think they're going to, either in June or September, they're definitely going to increase the federal funds target. Exactly how much, I don't know. I might be right on the money. I could be off. They need to do it. They're way, 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 way late. And I know why they're desperate to do that. They're afraid another recession is going to hit before they do it. And if that happens, we'll have another 7 years of near zero interest rate. With that, let me close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.